It's Marketplace Tech for Wednesday, June 1st. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. This week, the chipmaker Qualcomm announced a new kind of microchip aimed at products in the wearables and Internet of Things market. Most wearables and objects connected to the Internet promise a lot of functionality, but they haven't achieved huge adoption. Qualcomm's new chips are low-end and may be designed for a new kind of simple wearable that could be more common in the coming years. Lindsay Turrentine is editor-in-chief of CNET. Lindsay, nice to have you back.
Nice to be here, Ben.
So the Snapdragon 1100 line of chips is aimed at sections of the wearable market where super powerful computing maybe isn't a priority?
So this is really aimed at being the backbone of wearable devices that are not smartwatches, that are really taking care of a task. So the examples that Qualcomm gives are wearables for children or for seniors. If a manufacturer wants to make a device, say, to put on a child so that a parent can figure out where that child is and maybe even communicate directly with that child, this is the chipset that's going to help them create that product.
Is there a lot of money to be made in this kind of low-end chip market?
I'm skeptical that there's a lot of money to be made in the low-end chip market, but I think what Qualcomm is trying to do is to be there where the market might heat up in small ways. We're seeing that across the board, wearables seem to have tapered off a little bit in adoption. Qualcomm probably wants to be sitting in the right place when a manufacturer decides to make something that is just going to fill one particular need and not so much try to corner the entire wearables market.
Lindsay Turrentine, editor-in-chief of CNET. Lindsay, nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Ben.
Hurricane season officially starts today. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration expects this season to be about average. Coastal cities are still trying to increase preparedness, some of them by using new automated and computerized systems to fight things like storm surge and other forms of flooding. This includes New Orleans, where the Army Corps of Engineers is maintaining a $14.5 billion system built in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. The challenge with updated systems, they give hackers new ways to get in. Bob Marshall is a reporter for the website The Lens.
So there's basically a perimeter system of levees and flood walls. And of course, there are some openings in this system to allow shipping in and out. And so those floodgates are operated remotely, just as you would, you know, operate your printer remotely from your computer. And that's the concern, is that the hackers have developed ways of, you know, weaseling, if you will, into your standalone system.
Last December, that happened. Hackers got into part of the system and deployed ransomware, and the district was forced to pay $1,400 to get control again. Marshall says that even though the larger system may not be connected to the web, a mistake with a removable drive or some other form of poor tech hygiene could contribute. We've posted Marshall's story at facebook.com/marketplacetech. Today, a research project from Google called Magenta is being introduced to the world. Its goal? To see whether artificial intelligence can really be creative. Forms of AI are already good at many things, from identifying images to simple problem solving and impressive data analysis. But can they actually create music, for instance? The other day, I sat down with Doug Eck, research scientist at Magenta, to learn more. We started by talking about one of the most important elements of great music made by humans: surprise.
For example, starting with a very fixed form, like Bach would have done, and then changing direction. That's a kind of like well-used form of surprise, and I think you can model that, and listeners love it. It's like, oh, I got it. This is great. It's getting boring. Oh, he went in this direction. And another kind of surprise that you can, I think, model came later in music, when instead of starting with some fixed form and then changing direction, you start with a vague form and gradually clarify it, like Brahms does, or a lot of hip-hop artists will do this, starting with like some conflicting meter. You're not sure, where's the downbeat? And then in some way that really tricks you, you're pulled into the music in a way that you weren't previously expecting.
Can you describe a song that the computers have come up with, or have they made any songs yet?
We actually have a demo that we'll put online with what's called a recurrent neural network. So you play in a phrase, and
sure,
it just kind of tries to noodle along and carry on with the music, right?
Really?
Yeah. Now, it's noodly. Like, it's noodly, and I don't mean...
It's like that member of the band that you're like, really?
Yeah, would you really
do
just
you
shut
have
it down?
To, can you make it simple?
All machine learning generated music that I know of, and I've looked at this for a long time, like,
yeah,
sort of suffers from this big problem that we don't understand how to get this long structure in, like big chord changes. You know, the storytelling is missing.
Interesting. The narrative arc
absolutely
is missing.
And I'd make fun of Fish right now, but one of my colleagues is just such a Fish fan, he'd kill me, right? You know, it's like just one big noodly, you know, formless mess, right?
Yeah. That's really interesting. Why do you think that is?
That's everywhere. If you look at machine-generated text, it's lacking plot. This long timescale structure amounts to having memory and planning in place. And the idea that you're actually, you know, you've got a great understanding of the form, you can remember what's important, you can carry that forward, you can manipulate the right things, is the core of what makes any kind of temporal art hard.
Do you think a machine could make music that a human couldn't make?
Oh, absolutely. And I think what's even more interesting is that the machines can kind of become an extension of humans, allowing, you know, in the end, it's the artists that are driving. It's the musicians that are driving. In some sense, this could be like your co-pilot as you're creating things live, or you as a composer are starting to rely on being able to bounce ideas off of this much more complicated drum machine.
Doug Eck, he is research scientist working on Google's Magenta project. Doug, thanks for talking to me.
Hey, thanks again.
We have a much longer version of my interview with Doug Eck at MarketplaceTech.org. And while we are talking computers and problem solving, a new research paper from MIT, the University of Ottawa, and Bard College argues that beating a version of the Nintendo game Super Mario Brothers is one of the most difficult kinds of puzzles you can put in front of a problem-solving algorithm, meaning that once you teach certain algorithms to beat Mario, you could teach them to do all sorts of interesting things in the real world. Like what? Jumping into big green pipes, shooting fireballs? Maybe we should be teaching algorithms duck hunt instead so we can actually get some food out of the deal. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.